League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, August 9th, 2017, and today is an off day for the Green Bay Packers. They practiced on Monday, they practiced on Tuesday, and of course, with one day remaining before their first exhibition game against the Philadelphia Eagles, Coach Mike McCarthy is following sort of his typical in-season schedule, which would make today something like a Saturday from the regular season, and that means a walkthrough practice, which is very light in nature. You know, the goal is for the players to avoid injury, to not overexert themselves, but to reinforce the concepts that McCarthy and his staff want to get across one final time before kickoff tomorrow night. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. We thank you guys very much for listening. It's been a relatively busy week for the Packers. There's been a lot going on. On Tuesday, a couple things to talk about. First, there was the piece of news that the Packers decided to release defensive tackle LaTroy Guyon. This was a little bit of a shock, not because Guyon was released. That was sort of something that, if and when it ever happened, nobody was really going to be totally caught off guard by that action. But I think the timing of it was a little bit interesting. Guyon, to his credit, was actually having a terrific training camp. When you look at that one-on-one pass rush drill that I've talked about a number of times on this podcast, where it's one either defensive lineman or outside linebacker against one offensive lineman, Guyon had been tremendous. His strength is evident every time he gets down into a three-point stance. He can just blow guys off the line of scrimmage when he's playing at his best, and he'd had a very, very strong training camp. So with that in mind, it seemed a little peculiar, the timing of his release, because if he was playing well and you don't have to pay him for the first 4 weeks of the season because of that suspension for violating the league policy on performance-enhancing drugs, then why not keep him around until the suspension is over? You've already committed to him for the first 2 weeks of camp. You don't have to pay him during the first month of the regular season, so why not keep him here, see what your injury situation looks like, and go from there? So that's one argument. The other argument is, if you were going to release him at any point in time, or at least it was on your mind to consider releasing him during training camp, why bring him to camp at all? If you were at least tempted to get rid of the guy, then don't bring him to camp. You know, make this decision before camp starts, and so he doesn't waste 2 weeks up here, and you don't waste 2 weeks on a guy that you're tempted to get rid of. So the timing itself was a little bit puzzling, but as I've discussed before, I don't think the move itself was surprising, and it was something that was probably inevitable at some point. I didn't think LaTroy would make it through this season anyway on the active roster. So that's a little bit of piece of news there. Now, a couple of reasons why they could have done it today and done it the way that they did. First and foremost, there's a chance that the league was probably going to add on some sort of additional suspension to the four-game punishment that he already has. You know, you look at what that was for, and that was for performance-enhancing drugs. And then Guyon gets arrested for drunken driving, which, of course, is not a performance-enhancing drug. So the league would have had to figure out how you weigh one of those against the other, and do you add some sort of a punishment on top of a PED suspension because the guy violated another policy or had an issue with alcohol or an arrest or a crime or whatever the case may be, whatever's going on with a player. And so there's a chance that the Packers maybe caught wind of something that was coming down the pipe in the weeks or maybe even a month to come, and they decided, this suspension could be longer than four games. Let's part ways now. Let's cut our ties while we can. That's one option. Another option is they looked around and they saw that Brian Price, who was an undrafted rookie that bounced back and forth between the practice squad and the active roster last year, they could have looked around and really saw that he was having a very nice training camp. I think he's looked very good. I think he's looked very physical. I think he's been aggressive. I think just like Guyon, Price's strength has been really evident. He's not afraid to hit people, to bash people, and when he wins his one-on-one reps, he wins them very emphatically, and it's almost reminiscent of Mike Daniels in the way that he can really blast through guys, and that is in no way me saying that Brian Price is playing at the same level as Mike Daniels. I'm just saying that when those guys win their individual reps, whether it's in 11-on-11 or in one-on-one pass rush, they tend to win with a lot of force. And that is the comparison that I'm trying to make between those two guys. So there's a couple theories thrown out there of why the Packers could have made the move they did at this particular time. And who knows? There's also the option that, you know, Guyon maybe got in a little bit more trouble, or, there was something else going on with his case out in Hawaii from the drunken driving situation. Maybe there was something going on there. I don't really know. So there's a number of different theories, just sort of walking you through some of the ideas that were kicked around today and discussed at various points in time. Of course, when the locker room was open after practice, Guyon had already been released by that point, so he was, you know, of course, not there to speak about it or anything like that. And his teammates along the defensive line basically said that they were caught by surprise in terms of the timing of his release, because they knew he wasn't at practice yesterday, but they didn't know anything beyond that. And so a lot of them found out that Guyon had been released by speaking to the media. So in other words, Guyon was released during practice on Tuesday. The practice ends. The media goes into the locker room, talks to some of these players, and says, hey, you know, what happened with LaTroy? Did you know he got released, or what's going on there? And a number of the players basically said, oh, you know, we had no idea. You know, he got cut? What are you talking about? So they just knew he wasn't at practice, and a lot of them found out from us that he had ultimately been released. So that was really the news of the day. Another thing that happened yesterday is that Ted Thompson had his weekly press conference with the media. He tends to speak once a week with reporters during training camp, and then after that, he disappears until the scouting combine. Ted Thompson does not give an annual explanation, breakdown, rundown, analysis, whatever you want to call it. He doesn't do that for his 53-man roster. There's a lot of GMs around the league that do that, that will meet with reporters to discuss, you know, the compilation of what they've put together, the composition of the roster, all those types of things. Ted doesn't do that. So these are sort of the only regular appearances that we see of him throughout the year. And there wasn't really a ton of news to come out of it because, you know, it's Ted Thompson. But there was a really unique anecdote that came out of it involving the former Packers general manager and executive vice president Ron Wolf. And Thompson basically said that, you know, every so often, maybe every couple of years, every other year, sometimes a few years in a row, Ron would come into the facility at Lambeau Field, and he would sometimes sit in his son Elliot's office, and he would watch tape of practice, of OTAs, of training camp, whatever the case may be. And it's just because he's a guy that has watched tape his whole life. He likes looking at players. He likes evaluating players. Even if he's not, you know, writing formal evaluations or forming a roster of his own kind, he just likes being in that environment where he's testing his own eyes. He's looking at players. Do they pass the eye test? What does this guy look like? What does that guy look like? How does player A compare to player B? It's just something that gets into these guys' blood, I think, eventually. And so Ron was coming into Lambeau Field, coming into Elliott's office, watching tape, and then he might go out and talk to Ted and say, hey, you know, this rookie that you took in the third round, or, you know, this rookie that you drafted with, your compensatory in the sixth, that looks like a real player. And so the point of Ted's story was not necessarily to share that Ron came in and did those things, but more so that when Ron identified a player that Ted had drafted that Ron thought was going to be a really good player. In other words, he's sitting there watching the tape, and he goes, boy, you know, that Josh Jones, or boy, you know, that Demarius Randall, or that Nick Perry, whatever the case may be. That was something that means a little bit more to Ted. It hits home a little bit that the guy that had a lot of success here, built a lot of really good teams here, looks at a move that Ted made and sort of validates it to a degree. That was just kind of a unique story, and Ted is good for one of those stories every so often. You know, a lot of people rag on him for his demeanor and the way he handles himself. You know, he talks very slowly, he's not very interesting, he's not very forthcoming with the media, and there's a lot of truth in all of those things. But when he wants to be, A, he can be pretty funny. He has a very quick, dry sense of humor, and he has a very good self-deprecating sense of humor that is pretty funny and you know, can endear himself to some people. And B, he's a guy that, you know, he has some good stories from his times as a player, from his times in various stops around the league, from, you know, old drafts and things like that. And when he wants to open up and tell you a little something, he can do that. And so, you know, I personally wish that he would do it a little bit more often, because when he wants to be, he's pretty a decent guy to be around. And it's just, you know, it's not his personality to do that on a more regular basis or show that more frequently. So he doesn't, but, you know, I wish he would a little bit. I want to move on to talking a little bit more about what's going on the field in terms of players and things like that. And I wrote something that's probably up on the website by now, and some of you may have already read it, about Josh Hawkins. And so the reason I was interested in this topic is because so much has been written, and rightfully so, about Devon House, Kevin King, Demarius Randle, Quentin Rollins, etc., etc., etc. And I think it's really easy to overlook the fact that Hawkins was on the 53-man roster last year, made the team as an undrafted free agent, and actually got some playing time, you know, more so on special teams than anything else. But he was a guy that was on the field at times last season. And so he's sort of lost in the weeds, so to speak, as we enter this 2017 season. But over the last handful of practices, maybe since, well, I don't know, about Thursday of last week, I think he's actually turned it on a little bit, and I'm not suggesting that he's gotten to a level where he's competing with House or Randle or Rollins for some of those top spots, but I think he's pushing Ladarius Gunter, and I know Tom Silverstein and I talked about this the other day, but I'm just going to elaborate a little bit more on what Hawkins said, because I thought it was pretty interesting. So first and foremost, a little refresher on this guy. Hawkins was a walk-on at East Carolina, and then he proceeded to have an unbelievable pro day in which he ran the 40-yard dash in 4.39 seconds. He's got a vertical leap of over 40 inches, just a phenomenal athlete. And so the Packers ended up signing him as an undrafted free agent. He started out a little bit slow in camp last year, as I recall, but then he started making plays, and I think he finished with 2 interceptions in the exhibition games and a couple more interceptions during practice. And it was essentially, you know, what McCarthy and his staff always talk about, make plays, make plays, make plays. And he did that until he earned himself a spot on the 53-man roster. Now, for those of you who remember, it didn't go well for Hawkins once he was on the 53-man roster. He played early in the year against Detroit once some of those injuries started to kick in, and he gave up that really ugly touchdown in which it was a deep pass. I think it was to Marvin Jones down the right sideline, and he thought Jones was going to go out of bounds, so he kind of stopped running, and then Jones stayed in bounds and took off down the field for a deep touchdown, and Hawkins was basically left being viewed as a bonehead on that play for not hustling and essentially letting the guy into the end zone. From there on, he was essentially benched. He never really played much at all from scrimmage after that, contributed here and there on special teams, but just wasn't a factor. So I talked to him a little bit about his mentality going into this season and how last year's experience of, A, making the team as an undrafted free agent and experiencing all the highs that come with that juxtaposes with, B, his experience of getting some playing time and then performing badly enough to where the coaches don't trust him and bench him. And his answers were pretty interesting. I asked him if he got down on himself last year, because I think it would have been pretty easy for him to do so. And he actually said no. He said that it was a scenario where as soon as he got benched, and you know, he's smart enough to realize what was happening, he wanted to try and figure out ways to earn the coach's trust again. And even though he ran out of time doing that last year, he said it affected his mindset going into this season. So there were 2 particular changes that he made in terms of his mental approach to the upcoming year. And the first one is that on defense, he really wanted to try and play more like Sam Shields. And I asked him what he meant by that. And he said, well, Shields was a guy that, despite, you know, being only 5'9", 5'10", maybe 5'11", He was really good in press coverage. In other words, despite not being a very large, physical, powerful guy, Shields had the ability to get his hands on receivers at the line of scrimmage, disrupt their routes, cause a little bit of confusion, break up the timing between receivers and quarterbacks, and just essentially offset his lack of size with good technique, good timing, good hand placement, things like that. Hawkins is pretty similar to Shields in a couple of different ways. First, they're both undrafted free agents. Second of all, they have similar frames in terms of their size and stature. And third, they're both incredibly fast. You know, Shields was the fastest guy on the team, and if Hawkins is not the fastest guy on the team, he's very close. And so he wants to try and embrace that style of being more physical at the line of scrimmage, being more hands-on with receivers, trying to find ways to be physical despite the fact that his body type does not necessarily lend itself to physicality. And so Tom mentioned the other day on the podcast the one-on-one drills with corners and receivers where he was going up against Michael Clark. And any of you that have either read our stories or followed along on social media know that Michael Clark is 6'5 and a half. He's a real project of a wide receiver because he started out playing Division I basketball at St. Francis in Pennsylvania. And he's been making these unbelievable highlight catches because he's so tall, he has tremendous body control, and he's a good leaper. Now, Hawkins had an opportunity against Clark in this one-on-one drill where it's one corner, one receiver, and then they run a route and the quarterback throws it, receiver tries to catch, defender obviously tries to break it up or intercept. And they had an opportunity to go against each other, and basically, Hawkins just put his hands through Michael Clark's chest so hard that Michael Clark flat out stopped. Like, usually when a guy gets jammed, he'll fight it off and continue down the field. But Clark was so stunned and so taken aback and perhaps so inexperienced with that level of physicality that he just froze. And wide receivers coach Luke Getsy looked at him and said, "What are you doing? Get downfield. Keep going. Keep going." And so that was a real big moment for Hawkins. And I think that that's important for a couple of reasons, because that is exactly what he talked about wanting to do. He talked about wanting to be more physical, to get his hands on guys, and then later that same day, he went out and did it and performed at a high level. Since then, you know, he's been solid. I wouldn't say he's been great, and I wouldn't say he's been inconsistent, but he's been, you know, steady. He breaks up a pass here and there. He can be overly physical. During family night, he got flagged for pass interference, but this is a guy that I think is in a very interesting spot relative to Ladarius Gunter, because they're both guys that are intriguing to the Packers for different reasons, and it could come down to what type of skill set is most valuable in today's NFL. You look at Gunter, he's 6'1 and a half, he's got really long arms, he's a physical corner, but he can't run. He can't run at all. He's slow, he's below average speed, and if a guy gets any step on him at all, it's over. Gunter can't catch up. Hawkins, meanwhile, is very raw, did not play very much at all last season, and when he did, he played poorly, as I mentioned. But they don't have athleticism like Hawkins that you can just find anywhere. You don't find guys with 40.5-inch vertical leaps. You don't find guys with 40 times that are 4.39 seconds. You know, those things are hard to find. And so it's going to be interesting because I think that there could be a tendency or, I mean, that's not the right word, there could be a school of thought in which keeping Hawkins makes more sense than keeping Gunter, even though Gunter was an integral part of this team last year due to injury. So that's something to see as things play out. Last thing I want to touch on today has to do with a drill that we saw in Tuesday's practice, and it was the second time, only the second time, that we've seen the one-on-one blitz pickup drill. I talked about this a lot very early in camp. Essentially what this is, I'll give you a quick rundown, is the Packers set up these big tackling dummies, these big weighted rubberized things that are like the size of a person, and when you tackle it, it's soft enough so that you don't hurt yourself, and then it's weighted so that it bounces back up. And so they set up three or four of these to imitate offensive linemen. So in other words, they're separated by a couple of feet, and in between them you have the gaps that you would see when teams line up from scrimmage. So this one-on-one blitz pickup is one inside linebacker against one running back or fullback. And so the linebacker comes flying through a gap, and his goal, of course, is to sack the quarterback, and the running back or fullback has the task of smashing them, blocking them, preventing them, getting in their way, doing whatever they need to do to disrupt. Now, I missed the first handful of reps of this because the Packers are so gracious, and they run multiple drills at the same time of significant importance. So you have to choose what you want to watch, because God forbid they did things in an order that allowed people to watch them and focus in on them instead of focusing one half of the field on one thing, one half of the field on another, and making people pick their poison. So I missed the first handful of reps because I was walking over from another drill. But the first thing that I saw was safety Morgan Burnett, and this was the first time they mixed safeties into this drill, as I mentioned. It's typically almost exclusively outside linebackers, but they mixed Morgan Burnett and some of the other safeties into this. And Burnett comes flying across the line of scrimmage against rookie running back Devontae Mays, seventh-round pick from Utah State. And he flattens him like nothing I had seen before in training camp in my, well, this is now my third camp covering the Packers. So not only does he knock Devontae Mays back, not only does he make Mays lose his balance and completely fall backwards, but he essentially plants him on the ground in what Madden video games would probably show you as the definition of a pancake block, where he ran through him and put him so far on his back that it was straight into the ground. I mean, it was as if somebody ran into you full speed and you don't move at all, and of course, obviously, you're going to fall flat on your back. It was a vicious hit. It was an incredible blitz by Morgan Burnett and an incredibly poor blitz pickup by Devontae Mays. Now, I don't mean to pick on Mays, but what I'm trying to get across to you is that these rookies are very green in this area, and if a safety can flatten you and put you on your backside, you know, you're going to have some tougher tasks against inside linebackers that have some real girth to them. So what else stood out to me? Well, you look through the list here, and again, I did not see every rep. I missed the first five or six. So what I'm about to tell you, of course, could be swayed by any of the reps that I missed. But I saw Ty Montgomery go twice. I saw him, I saw Ty Montgomery go, do I have him twice? Yeah, twice in here. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm looking back through my notes. I had Ty Montgomery beating safety Jermaine Whitehead, and I had Ty Montgomery beating rookie safety Josh Jones. Now, are those significant wins? Probably not, because those guys aren't inside linebackers. They're not edge rushers. But this is a good step in the right direction for Montgomery. This is a guy that, at one point, in the first time they did it, lost his first three reps. And today, the two that I saw him, he won those matchups. That's a good step in the right direction. You look at Jamal Williams, the fourth-round pick from BYU that has sort of separated himself from the other running backs, so it's Montgomery 1, Williams 2, and then everybody else behind them. I'm looking through my notes again here. I saw Williams go twice, and I have Williams 2-0. I have him beating Morgan Burnett once, and I have him beating Blake Martinez once. So you're talking about your top two guys having improved showings in this particular drill. And I think that's a good step in the right direction. Of course, tomorrow night's game is going to be a totally different animal because it's going to be real pressure against real pass rushers with real contact in which you can take guys to the ground and be overly physical. So that is going to be a huge test for these guys, and that's going to be one area that I'm absolutely looking forward to seeing. Do they sink? Do they swim? Who performs well? Who really struggles? And what type of confidence Aaron Rodgers can have in these guys when we get to the point where the regular season arrives and they're going to be protecting number 12 and not number 7, Brett Hundley, or number 6, Joe Callahan, or number 8, Taysom Hill, your backup quarterbacks. So that's what I'm interested in seeing Thursday night. But as always, I've overstayed my welcome on the Wednesday edition of the podcast. We thank you so much for listening. There'll be another episode Thursday. And I'm going to see how things play out with Friday. I'm going to give it a shot for you guys. It's going to be a really long night for me to have to A, cover a night game, B, write stories, and then C, do the podcast. I probably won't get home till 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, but I'm going to give it a shot and see how it goes, because that will sort of give me a testing ground for the night games that are, you know, obviously going to come during the regular season. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how I sound. I might be delirious, but I'm going to give you what I said I would give you, which is 5 podcasts a week, Monday through Friday. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. You're in love, but what's love got to do with a little menage? After the party, me and you could just slide for a few and she could come too. That's love. Got to do it.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.